Ancient Greece was arguably one of the coolest times to be alive. When I think about this incredible civilization, I think about the amazing architecture, such as the Parthenon and the white marble columns. I also think about the fascinating culture and mythology that I digested in my binge readings of Percy Jackson. In addition, their advances in math, science, politics, and philosophy helped to lay down the foundation for our modern thinking. However, like every other civilization, the Greeks were plagued by disease as well. Today, we are going to dive into the most devastating outbreak in ancient Greek history, with a disease that is still a mystery to scientists and historians. Join me as we play a game of detective and try to infer which disease was responsible for the plague of Athens. Along the way, we'll give some background context, some real quotes from a scholar who survived during the pandemic, as well as scientific analysis to aid you in your quest to find out what killed off more than a quarter of the Athenian population. Welcome to A History of Pandemics. I'm Megan, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we delve into some of history's most devastating epidemics and pandemics. In this episode, we will take a look at the Plague of Athens, which was the most serious disease outbreak in ancient Greek history. You can find all episodes of the podcast for free on Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. To listen to A History of Pandemics, just click on the app and type in A History of Pandemics in the search bar. And now, back to the episode. In order to fully understand the Plague of Athens, we must first discuss the context in which this outbreak occurred. So, the Plague of Athens took place during the Second Peloponnesian War, which was fought between 431 and 405 BCE. This conflict was fought between the two most powerful Greek city-states, Athens and Sparta. Prior to the Second Peloponnesian War, there was a great deal of hostility between these two city-states. Athens was part of the Delian League, which was a coalition of Greek city-states to resist threats from Persia. Sparta, on the other hand, was part of the Peloponnesian League. In other words, this is a large-scale version of two rival gangs who just basically hate each other. Did you also notice that this war is called the Second Peloponnesian War? If you did, you might be wondering if there was perhaps a First Peloponnesian War. And if so, you are right. The First Peloponnesian War broke out a few decades before the second one, and ended with a 30-year truce. Obviously, the truce didn't work out. A fair number of wars begin when a smaller ally of a major world power initiates conflict. One notable example of this is Bosnia triggering World War I. In the case of the Second Peloponnesian War, Thebes, a Spartan ally, attacked Plataea, which was an Athenian ally, and thus, war broke out again between Athens and Sparta. The Second Peloponnesian War can be categorized into two periods of fighting. The first period of war was called the Archidamian War, named after the Spartan king Archidamus II. As we'll see later, it was during the first period of the war that the Plague of Athens struck. Athens initially had the advantage, as their strong navy attacked the island of Syracuse, an ally of Sparta. For reference, Sparta is inland, so they had a stronger army and failed to counteract Athens' naval attacks. However, the Spartan general Brasidas convinced Athens' allies to revolt, which led to anarchy. Then, in the Battle of Amphipolis in 422 BCE, both Brasidas and Cleon, the Athenian general, were killed. Although both leaders were killed in battle, Sparta was beginning to gain the upper hand. Thus, Nicias, another Athenian general, persuaded Athens to accept Sparta's offer of truce. This truce was later known as the Peace of Nicias. The Peace of Nicias was supposed to last 50 years, but in true Athenian-Spartan fashion, it only lasted 6 years before war resumed. In this second phase of fighting, Sparta was aided by the First Persian Empire, another one of Athens' rivals. This military assistance from Persia greatly contributed to Sparta's later success. In addition, Sparta learned from their mistakes in the Archidamian War and built up their own navy to compete with that of Athens. Due to these factors, Athens suffered a huge naval defeat in Sicily, from which they would never recover. By 411 BCE, Athens was also in political turmoil, where the democratic regime was overthrown by an oligarchy, which in turn was ousted by the regime of the 5,000. These sudden changes in Athenian leadership decentralized power, and the city-state was once again thrown into anarchy. Finally, in 405 BCE, Spartan general Lysander led his army to victory after defeating the Athenians at Aegospotami. This battle finally led to the war's conclusion. After the Second Peloponnesian War, Sparta became the most powerful Greek city-state, and this war marked the end of the Golden Age of ancient Greece. Coming up, a bout of plague takes over Athens in 430 BCE. Most of the information we know about the Plague of Athens comes from the Athenian historian and philosopher Thucydides. In his collection, History of the Peloponnesian War, Thucydides writes a fairly detailed description of the plague. Before we continue, I would like to make a note that the use of the word plague in this episode should not be confused with the disease bubonic plague, which is responsible for other outbreaks. According to Thucydides' account of the plague, the disease arrived in Athens at the port city of Piraeus. Symptoms of the plague included an intense fever, constant restlessness, and severe diarrhea. Thucydides also mentions that victims of the plague were, quote, tormented by an unceasing thirst, end quote. Many who contracted the plague died within 7 to 9 days of infection. Those who survived suffered consequences such as blindness, memory loss, and disfigurement of the fingers, toes, and genitals. Thucydides further elaborates that victims, quote, had violent heats in the head, redness and inflammation of the eyes, throat and tongue quickly suffused with blood, breath became unnatural and fetid, sneezing and hoarseness, violent cough vomiting, retching, violent convulsions, the body externally not so hot to the touch, nor yet pale, a livid color inkling to red, breaking out in pustules and ulcers, end quote. He also noted that animals who fed on the flesh of the corpses would die as well. Now, it's time for us to play detective. To this day, scientists are still debating the identity of the disease and its origin. Unfortunately for us, Thucydides did not have medical training, so he was only able to describe symptoms, but not a particular disease. That said, after years and years of deliberation, our top contenders are typhus, typhoid, viral hemorrhagic fever, measles, and smallpox. First up, typhus. This is the disease that most scientists believe is the culprit of the Plague of Athens. Symptoms of typhus include fever, chills, muscle pain, and vomiting, which is fairly similar to what victims of the Athenian plague experienced. Specifically, according to Dr. David Durack, who is a professor of medicine at Duke University, epidemic typhus fever is the best match to the Plague of Athens. Signs of epidemic typhus include confusion and the loss of fingers and toes. Dr. Durack also notes, quote, "It hits hardest in times of war and privation. It has about 20% mortality. It kills the victim after about 7 days, and it sometimes causes a striking complication, gangrene of the tips of the fingers and toes. The Plague of Athens had all these features," end quote. In addition, in January of 1999, the University of Maryland dedicated their annual medical conference to the Plague of Athens. After much deliberation, the attendees concluded that the most likely cause of the disease was typhus. However, typhus is typically spread by rats and lice, and there is no record that the Athenians lived in poor sanitary conditions. Additionally, one key symptom of typhus is deafness, which contradicts the accounts of blindness that Thucydides describes. Next, typhoid. Although this may sound similar to typhus, they are two separate diseases. That being said, symptoms of typhoid are also quite similar to that of the Plague of Athens. Such symptoms can include diarrhea, muscle pains, and stomach pains. In 2005, a study led by Dr. Manolis Papagrigorakis of the University of Athens found traces of Salmonella enterica in the dental pulp of plague victims. This is quite noteworthy, as Salmonella enterica is the bacteria that causes typhoid. However, a second study by Dr. Ben Shapiro from the University of California, Santa Cruz, contests Dr. Papagrigorakis' findings, stating that the previous study had false positive results. The second study also concluded that while Salmonella was indeed present in the pulp samples, there was no trace of typhoid. These conflicting results make it difficult for the scientific community to deduce whether typhoid did have a part in the outbreak or not. Another possible culprit of the plague is a slightly broader category of diseases known as viral hemorrhagic fever, or VHF. Examples of VHF include the Ebola virus and the Marburg virus. Many types of VHF are found in Africa, and thus, some scholars do believe that it is possible the Greeks' contact with Africa led to the transmission of the disease. While this may seem like a long shot, there are some noteworthy points to this claim. African elements have been found in ancient Greek frescoes and pottery. One clear example of this is the presence of guenons in Greek art, which were primates responsible for the transmission of Marburg virus in the 1960s. In addition, many ancient Greek statues, such as the statue of Zeus in Olympia and the Athena Parthenos, were made with heavy amounts of ivory, and the majority of ivory was sourced in Africa. In addition, the Roman philosopher Titus Lucretius Carus also suggests hemorrhagic fever as a culprit of the epidemic, a few hundred years after the plague occurred. Lucretius describes victims as, quote, "sudabant etiam fauces intrisecus atre sanguine," end quote. This translates to, quote, "the throat sweated within, black with blood," end quote. Lucretius also records victims having bloody discharge from their orifices. Unfortunately, our current techniques of identifying pathogens cannot identify traces of them from such a long time ago. In addition, viruses that cause hemorrhagic fever are RNA viruses, which do not leave a molecular footprint. Now, introducing our fourth suspect, measles. Thucydides notes that the virulence of the disease is possibly due to the newness of the disease in Athens. According to recent studies, measles may have emerged as early as the time of the Plague of Athens, which could explain why no one had immunity to the disease. Symptoms of measles, such as blindness, memory loss, and gangrene, also match Thucydides' descriptions. Scholars such as J.F.D. Shrewsbury and D.L. Page believe that measles is the most likely culprit because of the aforementioned points, as well as using the process of elimination to discard other likely suspects of the plague. Last but not least, smallpox. According to R.J. Lippmann and M.L. Lippmann, smallpox was the most likely culprit. They argue that some of Thucydides' described symptoms, such as rashes and thirstiness, were either incomplete or insignificant to the diagnosis of the disease. In addition, they note that secondary infections may have been possible, and that each victim will have a variety of symptoms. This would have easily confused Thucydides since he did not have medical training. Additionally, smallpox affects the victims' extremities, while other diseases like typhus or measles do not. Blindness can also result from an attack of smallpox as well. The scholars also claim that the loss of fingers and toes was a result of gangrene from a smallpox infection. However, you may be wondering, if smallpox was the culprit of the plague, why did Thucydides not mention the telltale smallpox scars? According to Lippmann, this is because Thucydides was influenced by the Hippocratic school of medicine, which emphasized prognosis over diagnosis. In other words, finding a cure to the disease was more important to him than identifying the disease. Or, of course, it may not have been smallpox that killed off the Athenians. Using this information, feel free to make an educated guess as to which disease was responsible, or maybe if it was even a combination of diseases. Unfortunately for now, this will likely remain a mystery for quite some time. Next, the impact of the plague of Athens. I would argue that the plague of Athens led to a huge setback for the Athenians for the remainder of the Second Peloponnesian War. Due to the heavy death toll, the center of political power was subsequently weakened. In addition, the plague killed off some very important Athenian figures, such as the general Pericles. Due to the heavy death toll, the center of political power was subsequently weakened. In fact, the plague of Athens is the largest recorded loss of life in ancient Greek history. The morality of the plague survivors was also thrown out of the window. According to Thucydides, quote, "The catastrophe was so overwhelming that men, not knowing what would happen next to them, became indifferent to every rule of religion or law," end quote. People began to spend money at an alarming rate because they were scared that they would not live long enough to enjoy the fruits of their labor. Likewise, some poor Athenians became extremely wealthy after inheriting the fortunes of their dead relatives. The plague of Athens also contributed to religious strife amongst the general population. Victims of the plague felt abandoned by the ancient Greek gods and believed that there was no point of worshiping them anymore. In addition, the temples themselves were also filled with the sick and dying. And to top that off, there was an oracle that predicted, quote, "A Spartan war will come and bring a pestilence with it," end quote. With the lack of power and organization, there was no way for Athens to be able to counter the might of the Spartan army and navy. Morale among the army and citizens had drastically plummeted as well. Thus, Athens was severely defeated in the Second Peloponnesian War and was reduced to a shell of its former self. Thank you for listening to A History of Pandemics. Next episode, we will begin a special two-part series on the show, unlike anything you've seen on this podcast yet. I shall not spoil it, but stay tuned for an episode to come out basically every week in the month of May. All episodes of A History of Pandemics are available for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. You can stream the podcast on your computer, phone, tablet, or any electronic device wherever you are. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow the podcast on Spotify and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. See you next time.